done it again.
Fulham needed a goal scorer. It seems like they found one.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under. We are back again after a superb victory against Spurs, Fulham winning 3-0. Money Muniz banks once again, a brace from Muniz, a first Fulham goal for Lukic. What a day out at the cottage, and here to discuss it all, as always, we have Elton. How are we going?
Oh, hi everyone, and what a night, what a day, what a very long night for us, of course, but what a pleasure. And it was, wow, I thought that win against Old Trafford was going to be one to remember. This is surely the performance and the night of the season so far, at least. Is there more to come? Who knows?
Fingers crossed there is. Also joining us today, we have Skibby. How are we going, Skibby?
Hi, guys. Yeah, absolutely buzzing. I mean, my adrenaline is still sky high. And you may notice I've got a bit of a raspy voice, which is as a result, I guess, of a fantastic performance. So I'm actually really, I'm like salivating, ready to talk about this. This is, I love it. I'm so happy, but I'm happy to be back.
I assume that's a raspy throat because you're sitting pretty close to the away end there.
Yeah, and I guess I'll touch upon this in a bit, but maybe the away supporter was very, very close, put it that way, to maybe the seat next to me. So,
yep, good stuff. And joining us for the first time online from Fulham Focus, we have Cottage Tactico on Twitter. How are we going today?
Hi, guys. Great to join you. I was worried we were going to be talking about a masterclass from your Australian country mate. But I think we've got a Marco masterclass to break down. I'm also clinging to my water to rest a raspy voice, largely because the hammy end were shouting Tottenham get battered everywhere they go for a very long time. It's not everywhere, though. It's just at the cottage. So that's a nice feeling, isn't it?
Just at the cottage, finally, after I think it's something like we mentioned it last time around. I think it was 2008 was the last time we beat them in the league at the cottage. So it's been a while, but geez, we really came out all guns blazing, and what a result against a Spurs team who've done well this season. And there's a lot to talk about, a lot to actually look back on really positively. The fact that we're scoring three goals against a side who are sitting so high up in the league. A clean sheet against a side who I think they'd gone 37 games in a row scoring or something along those lines. It's a really, really good result across all fronts. And guys, before we do jump into it, I'll throw over to you, Kish, just to give us a bit of an intro. For those who don't know you and the work that you do on Twitter, if you could just sort of give us a bit of a background about the kind of stuff that you cover on Twitter and yeah, tell us a bit about yourself.
Gosh, yeah, thanks so much. I think we started about a year ago now over at the Cottage Tactico on what I still call Twitter. I'm not calling it X. Sorry, Elon. Please don't take down my algorithm boost or whatever it's going at the moment. And I guess the inspiration is just that I'm sure as Fulham fans, you all agree that whenever we get analysis on Match of the Day or Monday Night Football or whatever it is that's breaking us down, it tends to be, oh, here's why the opposition didn't do very well. Or if we're lucky, sometimes we get, here's why X player did really well. Could they sign for Arsenal next year? It just sort of felt like we're getting a bit shortchanged. I follow a lot of accounts that do a lot of analysis and a lot of breakdowns of tactical stuff. And it just felt like it didn't really exist as much as it should. And it was something that I could do a little bit of and draw on the community for some ideas and some inspiration elsewhere. So yeah, if you're into the nerdy stuff, if you like tactics, I'm probably a decent place for you. And it's great to hear from lots of people and all the perspectives they get on what's going on. And look, it helps when you've got a decent manager in charge. You know, we've got Marco who really does have a tactical plan, and that means you can break it down. Perhaps it hasn't always been the easiest thing to do with Fulham.
It's interesting as well. You mentioned the manager. I mean, I think Marco has been one of our more tactically astute managers over the last few years. How would you rate him in terms of Fulham managers across, I guess, the last sort of 20 years or so, from the Al-Fayed years onwards, I guess? Whereabouts would you rate Marco in the scheme of things?
Sure. So look, I'm 30, I skew towards the the modern era of Fulham. I'm sure people can tell me a lot about sort of the glory days and things that I've missed in my lifetime. Look, I think we all agree there's probably two managers at the top of the table for Fulham. It's Marco and it's Roy. You know, maybe Marco can get us to a cup final and that will really solidify himself as top of the pops. But I do think that football has changed rapidly in the last sort of 5 or 6 years. I think that tactical plans are getting more and more intricate. And I think we've seen him up against some of the best in the league over the last couple of years. And he seems to do well against elite managers. He seems to play well against sort of some of the better tacticians out there. I rate him really, really highly. I'm really relieved that I think that the British media seem to be obsessed with his failings at Everton. If they weren't, I think he'd have moved on by now. And I sort of hope that he keeps on doing brilliant things when we're not on television so that people don't realise just how good he is, because I think he is as good as anyone in the league at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was last season, the manager of the season nominees were announced, and it was kind of shocking to see Marco left off that list when you got a promoted team who just finished outside the top half of the table and played such good football throughout the season as well. It is a testament to the job he's done, the fact that there were a lot of people up in arms about the fact that he wasn't nominated. But there seems to be a lot of managers now who the media love, looking at Kompany, Gary O'Neill, those guys who... I feel like they just don't even hold a candle to Marco Silva. He seems level above, but doesn't seem to get the same level of praise. And I don't know if that's because of his past at Everton and at Hull, and maybe his reputation was tarnished a little bit by that. But like you said, I'm happy for him to quietly sit in the background and maybe not get that media praise if it means we get a few more years out of him, because he should be managing a top six side easily. He should be managing in Europe the way he gets results out of this Fulham team. Let's jump into the game itself. Kish, were you actually at the game as well?
Yeah, I was in my usual seat in H5 and sort of getting increasingly staggered by how well we were doing. So yeah, looking forward to hearing you guys break it down.
Well, Skibby, I'll throw to you. I know, obviously, a 3-0 result, and I think at about the 80th minute, you were still a little bit nervous that there's still the chance that we can throw this one away. But winding it back to before the game even started, how did you feel going into this one? We talked about it when the game was previewed during the week, but I don't think anyone really expected us to come into this game and put up the kind of performance that we did.
No, absolutely. And I think the key point that we made sort of pre-match was Spurs score goals. And I think that was something that across the board that we all accepted was we're going to concede today. But the real combat was going to be how do we counter and sort of pick out the holes. And in a way, not just trying to boast in front of Kish here, but I feel like I was quite on the money with the fullbacks, that we would have to be able to, you know, combat these high attacking fullbacks, getting in behind. And to be honest with you, I was a little bit nervous about Willian on the left, because I think Iwobi is very good defensively. Willian, potentially not. I would have probably would have seen Iwobi on the left with Decor Dover Reed potentially on the right to try and combat sort of those high attacking fullbacks, which are not the most probably standard of attacking fullbacks of the overlap, but they seem to go more inside. But with those fullbacks, that they sort of cut inside, and that's where I thought that, you know, Decor Dover Reed would be following sort of them defensively. But, you know, if we were able to combat that, that's where I thought, you know, the 2-2 draw, which I predicted, would come in. But never did I expect us to play as well as we did.
Yeah, it really felt like... well, I mean, I've said it a few times. I think it was the tweet that I put out immediately after the game. That really felt like the best performance under Silva since he's taken over as Fulham manager. Yeah. Just as an all-round performance, not just the way that we played, but tactically the way we actually broke Spurs down and kind of dominated them. And, you know, we've played Spurs a couple of times this season and looked fairly good against them, I think, both times. But I was hoping we'd put up a decent fight in this game. Dad, were you also surprised at how well Fulham actually came out and kind of dominated the game entirely?
Well, I think we're always concerned at kind of what level of intensity Fulham we're going to get. And we know we're good enough on our best days, but I thought our intensity and our desire was enormous in the first half. It was really palpable. Not only was there a good plan, but I think it just looked like we wanted it. And we were hunting in packs, and there was a real clear plan that as the ball broke, there were always a couple. We won the ball back, you know, not, I wouldn't say easily, but consistently well. And I just felt very early on that something was on here. And as it turns out, I mean, we really could have gone into the break 3-0 up. I think there were a couple of really, really good chances, which didn't force any saves by the keepers, but some fortunate or maybe good defending caused some deflections. But they were clear and very, very good shots. And we were creating a lot of opportunities. But most of all, we seem to be really, really up for it. And Marco does have a way of preparing these guys and really getting them up for very, very big games. And it's just very, very exciting to watch. I think there was a sense of disbelief, surely. Mm. No one was sitting back and going, yeah, expecting this. And I was kind of pinching myself thinking, is this actually happening? Which was very enjoyable, very, very enjoyable. In fact, I have to say that Jack and I were sitting next to each other and we didn't really talk about it that much because I think we were just absolutely glued and gripped to it.
There was almost a sense of shock. You know, usually we watch the games together and a goal goes in and we're, you know, celebrating hard. But every time we scored, it was like, oh, shit, we scored again. I can't believe this is actually happening. Like it almost wasn't computing, but it was like you say, a really good result. And Marco does have a tendency to get players up. And I don't know if you guys saw in the pre-match press conference, Marco was asked if Tottenham have more to play for than Fulham, and maybe Fulham might not be quite as up for it as Spurs were because of that. And Marco quashed it very, very quickly. And I think that also then translated to the way we played on field. We definitely were out there and really pressing hard, really sticking to the plan, and it paid off. Kisha, I know you predicted a lineup beforehand. I think you said you got 10 out of 11, right? What was the one position you thought, one selection rather, that you thought Marco might have gone with?
Yeah, I think it was a welcome one wrong, and that was that he kept faith in Sasa Lukic. And I think it's the sort of game where in the past, Harrison Reed would start that match and Marco would go back to Old Faithful and he'd want to compete and he'd trust Reed to play that role. And I think that the fact that he gave Lukic the nod is a huge, huge sort of compliment to how he's played and a sign of trust from the manager. And he sort of, I mean, you saw it after his goal, and I'm sure we'll talk about the goals in a minute, sort of the absolute smile on his face sort of in front of me in the Hammersmith end. He strikes me as a player who benefits from having a manager who puts his arm around him and says, I trust you. And I think for the first time, he's feeling that as a Fulham player. And it was interesting because he's asking Lukic to play a little bit higher than he has done recently because Polina came back in. And he kept Lukic on the right of that midfield too. And maybe that's why, Skipper, you were saying you were slightly worried about Willian sort of having the legs to put the shift in down that left-hand side. Well, he sort of had Polina over that side with him as well. And that's a very nice man to have at your back if you're worried about defending. So, yeah, I thought, again, it's a selection from Marco that's got man management in mind just as well as it did a tactical approach, which we'll come to in a bit. But I was delighted for Lukic that he got the nod, to be honest, because I think there's nothing worse than thinking you're just about getting sort of your act together as a player and then you're out the team again. And other managers wouldn't necessarily give you that time. So, yeah, I was delighted by that. And obviously, with hindsight, I'm sure we all are as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure he is the person I would have gone with. I mean, I'm still a big Tom Kearney fan personally, and I would have liked to have seen Tom Kearney start for the creativity he gives. But Sasa Lukic, every game that he seems to play, he seems to improve at the moment. And I know early doors, we saw Lukic come in and often not make much of an impact. Even a few games ago, before Polina was out with the suspension, I remember Lukic came off the bench and I think his first touch was a yellow card and he just looked a little bit all over the place. But that little stint where he had to play those couple of games with Polina out, it really seems to have given him a massive boost. And like you say, maybe it is just that sort of arm around the shoulder saying, Sassy, you're our guy for the next few weeks. This is your position. Hold it down now. It can be yours. Pelini is coming back in, but make that other position yours. And he's been superb. I think he's been one of our best players over the last sort of five games or so. And more so in the fact that he just goes about his business and he's sometimes unnoticed. And then you actually go back and look at maybe a little highlights package of what he's done during the game and you go, yeah, geez, he had a really good game. I'm thinking, you know, the back heel that almost set up the Wilson goal in the Wolves game, some of his movement, some of his passing. It's really good to see a player like Lukic come on because I think, as we spoke about a few weeks ago as well, when we look at the squad in general and the depth there now, you look at players like Lukic potentially now holding down a starting spot and that pushes Kearney and Reed back to the bench. And all of a sudden you go, okay, they're really good players to have coming off the bench now. And same with, you know, you got Willian, Iwobi, Harry Wilson, Deckard over Reed. These guys are all just adding depth to us now. And it's really exciting time seeing how we're coming on. And I think Lukic is a big part of that. The fact that we've seen him improve so much so quickly, it seems as well. Let's talk about the first goal. Skibby, it's down your end, so I think you get to chat about it the most. A really great ball from Anthony Robinson across, who was outstanding, and we can definitely touch on Robinson a little bit more during the pod, but a great ball across. Mooney's with a really good first touch and a good first-time finish as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the real commemoration here for Muniz for me is that I think about 5 minutes before he had a really good chance where Robinson managed to sort of beat his man, get to the byline, pull it back, just needed any kind of touch towards goal and it was in and it went straight through his legs, I believe. I mean, a lot of players we've seen recently could kick themselves after that, not really push on, but Muniz, he's a trier. He just picks himself up and goes again, which I absolutely love about him. And yeah, it was after sort of wave after wave and wave coming down that left-hand side. And I think Pereira picks up the ball and Robinson's already on the move. So the way that we were able to sort of win the ball back and start attacking Spurs as soon as we can, that we had sort of, I think it was Porro out of position. I think Saar had come across trying to sort of prevent anything, but the pace and willingness of Robinson to get down that side is just always a threat for us. And he's been slated, let's be honest, Robinson this year. Yeah, he's very athletic, gets to the byline, but his final ball is always too long or can't beat the first man. But fair play, absolute peach of an early ball straight to the feet of Muniz, who had pulled away from, I believe it was Dragosin, which was great movement, great first touch. And once you get into that position with a great first touch, goals at your mercy anywhere, and he picked his spot, didn't overthink it, and it was a fantastic goal and absolutely deserved. And I know we touched upon it a few weeks ago maybe, that is Muniz becoming our number nine. That was probably my favorite goal of his. Not was it a kind of picking up the loose ball poacher's finish. It was a composed striker. It was just everything was perfect, the touch, the finish, and fair play. What a fantastic goal to put us 1-0. And I think even Sky said against the run of play, which I don't know where they got that from, but it was a well-deserved goal, 1-0. And he put us in a great position just before half time.
Yeah.
Is there actually any more doubt about whether Mooney's is the man? What was he going to do? Score a hat trick against City? I mean, he's the man,
isn't he? He's the man. It's amazing what a difference about a week makes. I think I'm more convinced every time I see him play. And I think now a brace against Spurs in a composed way that he did. Yeah, he's got to be.
Did you know, you guys, maybe you could see a little bit of that, Skibby. But certainly on the feed that we saw, after he scored, it was a slightly different reaction from him facially. He was it was almost visceral. The cortisol in his sort of gut rising, and he looked so inwardly confident. It wasn't a teary welling up.
I'm that guy.
It was like, yep, I'm the guy, and I'm probably going to score more. He looked, without being cocky, but he looked like, yep, that was coming. Mm. It was so good to see. And, I think everyone was calling it before the end of the match that obviously Mooney's with his brace would get all the plaudits and everyone would be wanting to talk about how well he's doing and how much his star is rising. But it's one of those harsh things that Robinson... I think people have been very fair. They haven't overlooked Robinson's performance at all because I don't think anyone's missed it. But he was absolutely outstanding. And I looked at it a couple of times where the camera or the director caught him. He was absolutely cooked, and he's an athlete. He was absolutely exhausted on his haunches and sucking it in very hard with about 10 or 15 to go. But he was so, so outstanding. And one of the other things I thought we did really well last night, and I've seen this improvement the last couple of weeks, is that our balls are coming in to the box really early. Because, we sort of telecast those generally, and it's pretty predictable. But when you're breaking so quickly and getting those balls in so early, it's a different dimension.
And, I think it's now because we've got a striker who's able to, with a bit of pace about him, to be able to get into the box earlier. I think beforehand, with a certain person that I won't name, he would sort of take his time to get into the box. But, I mean, he was a proper poacher, don't get me wrong, and a great finisher, but we would always have to sort of wait for him to sort of trundle into the box, whereas now we've got a striker who's keen to be on the shoulder of the sort of the defender and sort of make that space for him and be there for that early ball. And I think we're starting to see that with Muniz, which is a fantastic asset to have, as we saw yesterday. I mean, we could have walked away with three if sort of luck was a bit more on his side. But it's just a different dynamic.
I think if I'm decoding what you're saying there, Skibby, is that Muniz has the potential to be a greater striker than the man.
Yes. Absolutely.
I think so.
I feel the last thing, I mean, you said earlier, sort of what's the last thing or what else does Muniz have to show? I think there's one thing I'd need to see from him before I'm absolutely sold. Right? And I'm very sold at the moment. And that's, I need him to go on a run of games where he doesn't score a goal and then come again. He had one game without a goal and he's popped back up and he was fantastic last night. And the work rate's always there and the overall play and the hold-up play, which we'll come to, was excellent. And you're right, that confidence is there. And I agree, I think that the confidence will stay there. And I think there is a change in his outlook and the change of how he feels, even in stature on the pitch. There will come a time, as every striker has, where it doesn't go in for a few games. And we just need to see that he's got that consistency to keep doing what he does, not drop his head and go again. And that's literally the last thing. And I'm quite confident it will be there. But that's the only thing in the back of my mind for him.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think we mentioned that last time we were having the conversation about what more does he need to prove was, definitely that. It's down to confidence. It's that barren run and how you bounce back from it. Not scoring for 2, 3, 4 games, which happens to all strikers as well, and then being able to come back and actually score goals off the back of that and bounce back to where the level that you were at before. And I agree. I think he looks like a kind of player who's not letting it affect him too much. And you know, he went on quite a long scoreless streak before he started scoring goals. And once he did break the duck finally, it's been flowing since then. I think I saw that Muniz has scored the most goals in the Premier League since the start of February, which is incredible. I'd say he's probably an outside chance again for a Player of the Month nomination, seeing as we're going into an international break. I don't think there's another game until April now. He's come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of months, and I don't think we saw glimpses when he played against Man United earlier in the season and had to go off injured, and it's definitely something there. But the fact is now he's actually starting to, come through and score the goals and get a couple of assists and make a nuisance of himself. Some of the passes, the touches in behind that he played yesterday were just is brilliant to see. And, you know, we talk about Mitro was very good at that often, holding the play up, laying the ball off and playing good through passes, or at least being a bit of a centre point for the attacking play. I think Muniz actually has a little bit more about him than Mitro does in terms of some of those passes that he put in behind yesterday.
You know, let's Jack, sorry. Can I just say that, if I'm reading between the lines, Silva, if he's anything, he's a very, very good man manager. I think he understands that element of the game really, really well. And as a result, he's certainly backing people until they, doggedly backing people until they reveal what he believes is in there. I sense that he really rates Muniz as a good egg and someone who works very hard. He talks about his work ethic a lot. And obviously he's a young guy and he's playing on the highest level and the higher, bigger stage. And it's only natural that's going to weigh heavy on you if you don't score goals as your job is to. But if he's got someone like Silva with his arm around him and the whole team embracing him as this guy who's really doing it for Fulham at the moment, I back the guy. I mean, I know it's you don't know until you're really there and you're really in the trenches. But I thought Mitrovic was a temperamental guy. He's a very emotional guy, but he's also quite fragile. And, you know, he had a big personality, or dare I say ego. And if he wasn't scoring, maybe that weighed enormously on him. And maybe Muniz is something different. I know it's too early to say, and you're definitely right, Kish, that will define, you know, what he is for his long-term career. But yeah, I think it's really promising, really, really promising.
Yeah, absolutely. Second goal of the day, first goal for Sasa Lukic for Fulham. Again, maybe a little bit of fortune there, comes off his knee, but it's really good play. Castagna putting the cross in, Castagna getting an assist is always good to see. A bloke who I didn't think would be starting for us for the majority of the season, but managed to displace Kenny Tete, who I think was probably at the time one of the best defenders outside the top six clubs in the league. And Castagna all of a sudden is completely keeping out of the team. It's good things to see for Fulham, and really good, like we said at the start, Sasa Lukic had a bit of a rough start to his Fulham life. He's been at the club just over a year now, finally got his first goal for the club after, I think, 30 or 40 appearances. Kish, I'll throw to you. How important do you think that is for someone like Sasa Lukic, who seems to be such a confidence player, to finally be off the mark and playing the way he is at the moment?
Yeah, I think massive. And I think we can see sort of in his demeanour the sort of the change, and the goal will just further that. I mean, I think that the difference we've seen from him is that the speed at which he plays and the intensity with which he plays has picked up. So before, he always looked good. He always looked technical. He always had sort of flashes where you thought, oh, gosh, there's a player here. But sort of the speed and tenacity that Marco insists on in this Fulham side just wasn't there. He was like, he's playing at a different tempo to everyone else. He's now sort of doing everything that he was doing before, but at twice the speed. Even sort of the intent with which he burst forward, you know, a number of times in that game, he was the person making that overlapping run that Harrison Reeve usually does on that right-hand side. And he did it with a huge amount of conviction, and he got his reward for this goal, which is only going to make you want to do it again and again. So, yeah, it was brilliant. And I think both this goal and similarly, I thought Muniz's goal came at a good time for Fulham. We mentioned sort of against the run of play. We absolutely battered them for the first sort of half an hour. And then they had a spell where they missed a number of chances through Son and through Maddison. And it started to think, oh, God, here we go again. We've missed chances. They're going to punish us. Muniz gets his goal. We get into half time. You come back in the second half and you think, right, they're going to really have a go now. And that goal sort of just takes the wind out of their sails very, very quickly. So, yeah, both for him and for the game, I thought a very, very important goal. And yeah, it was a joy. And I think at that point you start to really believe that there's a result here for Fulham. It wasn't sort of a good performance that might ultimately end with nothing. It was a good performance that they should be turning into 3 points every day of the week. Brilliant.
I think it's also an awkward little time that Fulham seem to struggle with a little bit. We don't come out in the second half very well often. So to actually score 4 minutes into the second half and put ourselves 2-0 up, it like I said, when we talked about it before, it kind of felt a little bit unreal. We don't really have those moments where we come out flying in the second half, get an extra goal, move into a much more comfortable position. And to see Lukic score that, it did feel like it was going to be our day at that point. A really good finish by him. I think there you just have to get anything on the ball. He does well to get a knee to it. And Vicario's, you know, flat-footed there, can't do anything about it. I think Vicario had kind of an okay game. He made a fair few good saves, but maybe could have done a little bit better. He looked a little bit out of position for Muniz's first goal and maybe would be thinking he should do a little bit better off Lukic's goal as well when the angle is quite tight. Looking at the third goal, Muniz, again, it's a bit of a scramble, but there's some good work in the box. Skibby, this one, you might not have had the best view of it and seen it a bit of a pinball around, but really well done by Bassi from keeping the ball alive there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to touch upon. So we saw a goal, I believe it was Old Trafford, wasn't it, where Bassi sort of leathered it, ball bounces to him, he leathers it, you know, and scores. And I think we're now starting to see he's actually quite a good asset in the box, not just for his heading ability and his strength, but he's actually quite good with the ball at his feet because he gets that ball out and away from the defender, sort of pivots and sort of just gets it towards goal. I don't know if Vicario actually gets a touch, but I believe it hits the post and kind of then is there for the taking. And that's where Muniz is just shown his absolute quality for me of reacting first and took an absolute kick for his troubles where the defender tried to get it out and caught him on the back of the leg, but he was there first. And I think all the credit for me has got to be for Bassi there, just to be that composed on the ball in the box and create a chance out of more or less nothing, really. But those are sort of the ugly goals which you want to take. I mean, there's all great of like a complete contrast to the first goal where, you know, a really well-worked ball outside, early pinpoint cross, great touch and finish. We're now scoring the goals where, you know, potentially a more tenacious Fulham wouldn't have maybe gambled on those sort of chances and we're always sort of second best to the ball. And I think that's all sort of testament to Marco of what we saw of in the game as a whole, which we wanted to be in their face, get to the 50-50 ball first. And we got our rewards from a third goal of a ball sort of bouncing around the box and we wanted it more.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually think that, and Marco did credit the crowd in his post-match press conference. I actually think, you know, 2-0 up against Spurs and looking like you're home, it was a really interesting rear view on that goal where the ball breaks free. I actually thought that Bassi put it in when he hit the post. Ball breaks free. I mean, it's broken wide of the keeper. He can't do much about it. But to see the reaction and the desperation and desire from Muniz to get to that ball first and just get something on it, absolutely incredible. Really, really good. And so I think that you can't underestimate just how much you guys in the stands actually carried them home last night. I really believe that.
Yeah, I mean, there was the thing that I found really interesting is I said in H5. H5 stood for the entirety of the first half, pretty much. I mean, that's unheard of at a home game. I mean, away from home, that's completely normal. I mean, nobody sat down at Old Trafford the entire time. But, you know, I don't really know what it was because, I mean, this was before we'd scored a goal, before we thought this incredible result was on, in which case, sure, the excitement got ramped up. There was something in the air last night that I think people were really up for it. And, I mean, Postecoglou talked about sort of his players sort of just being second best and not up for it in the same way that Fulham were. And, you know, we mentioned Anthony Robinson, who sort of embodied that sort of just desire to win and that sort of that aggression. And there was something in that from the fans yesterday, which is rare in sort of very genteel Fulham, Victoria Sponge jokes and the rest of it. We were up for it and we wanted the win. And it's something I haven't really felt at home since maybe the Arsenal game. It was, I think there's something in that.
Yeah, definitely. A crowd always makes a difference. You could tell, I mean, we obviously just watch it through a TV, but you could really tell there was an atmosphere there. And I think, especially the fact that Fulham started the game so well, I think we had our first chance after 90 seconds or something along those lines. And it definitely makes a massive difference when you get those early chances and you go, okay, this isn't going to be one of those games where we're sitting back and defending. We're actually trying to win this game. And it definitely G's the crowd up when that happens, because everyone in the stadium goes, okay, we're here to actually win this game and put on a performance.
One of the things I actually loved, just talking further about Sasa Lukic's performance, not only did this team look incredibly well-drilled, which we're going to come on to, but Marco got into Sasa Lukic's head because he absolutely did a job. And I don't know if you guys saw, there was one incident where part of his job and his remit last night was totally to rough up Maddison. And it was most uncharacteristic of Sasa Lukic, who we've kind of, grown to know, that he pushes him in the back and catches him late without causing a foul, but absolutely pissed him off and rattled him somewhat. And then he comes and there's another encounter and Madison's kicking out a bit and basically stopped thinking about his football and kind of trying to get one back on him. And Pellini is in when Lukic is not in there. And I just thought that was all part of it. And we were combative and we didn't let them settle like they probably expect to. And, it's all those little components, isn't it? It's not just the tactics. It is that intensity and bringing it all together.
Really good. In the preview, I think I sort of touched upon Reed and Pellini pivot against Maddison, where, we see Reed as this real high work rate, kind of almost like a bulldog attempt. He just doesn't stop going, nipping at people's heels type of thing. And that's why I sort of wanted the Pellini and Reed pivot for that reason. And I was so happy when Lukic had obviously stepped up to that role. And the exact scenario you were talking about, I just absolutely loved. And it actually led to Maddison's substitution, because the moment that you mentioned, I think he then tries to get Lukic back and sort of takes him off the ball. And Pellini sees that. And so next time, Maddison's then sort of skips it. I think he breaks the tackle, skips away. And as soon as Pellini then absolutely does what Pellini does best and picks up a yellow card. But in the process, he's kind of wounded Maddison. People may frown upon it, but it was the tactics. And that was what we wanted to do, is absolutely disrupt his game. Because Maddison, for me, is one of those players. He's very, very luxury player. He doesn't necessarily do the dirty work, but if he has enough time on the ball, he can hurt you. So if you start to sort of let him know he's in a game, he can lose his head. And we did see him lose his head. And that's what actually led to his substitution, that he sort of lost his head, lost his kind of footballing brain for a moment, which then led him to fall into a tackle because he provoked the wrong player in Pellini.
Yeah, 100%. Maddison was shook from that moment onwards, I think. And I'm sure it was a tactic that Marco spoke about to actually get into him, because we were definitely roughing him up a little bit. Also interested to hear your opinions on why Son was potentially so quiet, because I genuinely a couple of times forgot that he was there. He barely touched the ball. Kish, maybe you can touch on how Fulham kept Son quiet for basically the whole game, to the point where he got subbed off.
Yeah, look, I think that there's sort of a number of ways of doing this. I think, first of all, let's just look at the personnel. So Bassi and Tosin are sort of what you'd engineer in a lab if you want to keep a striker like sort of Son quiet. They're both rapid. They're really quick as centre-halves. They're aggressive. Son sort of, you can get after him a bit, but I don't think he wanted anything to do with Calvin Bassey. He seemed to just try and run onto Tosin all the time. And I think that just as individuals, they did really well. I would caveat this by saying that there's another version of this game where Son puts that chance in the first half in the top corner, Fulham go one goal down, and the entire complexion of the game is different. And he wasn't that far away. So, you know, the life of the striker is such that, you know, fine margins, as our former manager, Scott Parker, would often say. If that goes in, maybe we analyse it quite differently. But I thought that we did a really good job on him. And look, I think the thing about Son is that he's a great player. I think when he plays as a striker, he needs some service. He's not sort of the sort of person who could do it all by himself. And I think it goes back to what we were saying a bit earlier, which is Maddison and Kulusevski are normally the sort of the service providers for Son. I thought Anthony Robinson had a fantastic game against. I think Kulusevski is probably their biggest threat. I think he's a very, very good player. And there and Robinson just matched him physically because he's a big guy as well, and he's quick and he's strong. And I thought Robinson did really well. And I sort of in my preview, I assumed we'd put Polina on Maddison. So he's our best defensive player. He's probably their biggest attacking threat. We'd stick Charpini on him. I think for sort of in possession reasons, we wanted Lukic over that side, which we'll come to. But like you were saying earlier, Lukic is just sort of a more subtle hatchet man than João Polina. I mean, Polina would have kicked Maddison in the first minute, got booked, and we'd have been under pressure. Lukic has got that sort of Rodri, Fernandinho sort of sly vibe about him, where I get the feeling, and I hope no referees are watching this, I think he might be able to get away with a few because he's just not a very plausible villain. He doesn't seem physically big and strong and scary, but actually I think he's quite niggly and can be quite nasty. So, yeah, I think for a number of reasons, we kept that pipeline to Son sort of quiet. And when it did get to him, our centre-halves were in a good place to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was great to see the fact that we're able to actually shut down, you know, a world-class player like that. And we have seen it quite a few times this season. I know when we played Liverpool, Salah was pretty quiet. Raheem Sterling was quiet against us this year. We seem to be able to take those players out of the game at the moment. And I actually think we play better, or this season statistically, it seems we play better against teams in the top half than the bottom half. We've picked up 20 points this season against teams in the top 10 and 19 against teams in the bottom. So it really has been a bit of a turnaround from last year where we really struggled to get anything out of the teams in the top half, but destroyed the teams around us. It seems to be that we've found a bit more of a balance to be able to actually get results against these higher up teams. I want to get into a bit more of a tactical deep dive. So we'll have a quick look at the stats from the game. Fulham with 43% possession to Tottenham's 57. Shots on target and on goal fairly similar. Fulham with 16 shots, 7 on target. Spurs with 14 shots, 5 on target. Spurs with 546 passes to Fulham's 400. About 4 corners to Fulham. Spurs had 5 and fouls. Fulham 9, Spurs 10. a quick look at the table. Fulham, believe it or not, still in 12th place. I think that's a solid, I don't know how long it's been, but it's getting a bit ridiculous now. We just can't seem to get out of 12th, no matter if we win or lose. But sitting on 38 points, the big point here is we're now 5 points behind West Ham, who are in 7th. There are some games in hand for the teams above us, but we really are starting to put a bit of pressure on there. And with 9 games left in the season, there is a lot to still play for. We're definitely clear of the teams below us. Bournemouth are just the 3 points behind us, but after that, there's a 9-point jump down to Crystal Palace. So there really does seem like there's only one way to go from here, which is up. We've got a couple of good fixtures coming up. I think we play Sheffield United and then Nottingham Forest, 2 games that we should definitely be looking at winning. And if we do win both of those games, I really think we will see us start to climb up the table. I'd say Brighton, West Ham, Wolves and Newcastle as well might be struggling over the next few weeks with the injuries that they've got and busy schedules as well with some European football. So there is a lot to still happen over the next few weeks once we come back from the international break. Kish, I'm going to hand to you now. You've prepared a few bits of info for us. I'll flick to a slide for those following along on the live stream. Kish, if you don't mind just giving us a bit of background about what you've picked out here and what you've identified Fulham doing well.
Sure. I mean, I feel after a lot of games this season, we've left thinking, gosh, Marco Silva has this Fulham side really well drilled. So I wanted to pick out just an example of the sort of thing that I think they are planning, they're practicing, and the patterns that we're seeing come out. So what this is about is build up. So we know that Spurs like to press high. They're one of the highest pressing teams in the league, and they're going to put some pressure on us as we try and get the ball out. And sometimes we just got rid of this by having Leno boot it as far as he could. Oddly, sometimes to Willian, who seemed to be doing a bit of work getting on the ball in the final third, but usually to Muniz. But what we have here is sort of a pattern of playing out from the back that usually gets associated with someone like Roberto De Zerbi. So what Marco's doing is he's trying to move the ball in places that will make the team press in certain areas. And because he's moved that team to press in a certain area, he's gained space elsewhere. And I think that one of the things that the team identified going into today is that Spurs are missing their left centre-back, Mickey van der Ven. They had Dragusin standing in, which is sort of revenge because the last time we played them, we had Calvin Bassey out of position on his wrong foot at centre-half. It was their turn this time. And I think what they've done is they've tried to put some pressure on him in a number of ways. And this started right from the beginning of the game and how we played out the back. So what we tend to do is Leno gets the ball and we move to the left. We play the ball to the left. And the reason we do that is we want players to engage in the press over to the left-hand side. And they can't just leave Bassey on the ball and think, oh, he's not as good on the ball, let's set off him, because someone like Willian will drop in and you don't want to give Willian the ball easily and he can build out from the back. So we engage them over to the left-hand side and that stresses them out. And then we bring it back over to the right-hand side, either by sort of a risky pass to João Palhinha, who pulls it back to Tosin, or just from Leno out to Tosin himself. And Tosin's sort of trusted to be able to read what's going on. And next to him, we have Timothy Castagne. And I think this is really important when you understand why Castagne has become so important to Marco Silva, because Kenny Tete is a fantastic fullback going back and forth and sort of springing forward and in duels and bombing on. He's probably not as good in tight space as Castagne. He's quite assured on the ball. So Tosin can give the ball to Castagne right on the right-hand side. All of the Spurs team now are starting to sort of press into Timothy Castagne. And both Sasa Lukic and Iwobi are dragging their markers away from Rodrigo Muniz, who's gone over onto the right touchline. And Castagne then can just knock a ball into Rodrigo Muniz. Lukic has ran away the defensive midfielder. Iwobi's brought the left back sort of back into the middle of the field. And Muniz has a one-on-one duel with Dragusin in the air. And we back him to win that. And when he does win that, we then absolutely bomb forward a load of numbers alongside him. Andreas gets close to him. It won't be Lukic and Castagne himself all run up and try and join Muniz. And we sort of overload that right-hand side. And we did this again and again and again. And after a while, they sort of stopped tracking Lukic and Iwobi. So we said, fine, Tosin and Castagne aren't going to knock it forward to Muniz. We're going to pass it into Lukic and Iwobi and we're going to play little passes and break up the field that way. And I just thought it was so simple. It was so quickly done on the pitch. You know, you get a sense that this has been absolutely drilled over a number of weeks and slightly adapted to target an individual player on the Spurs team. I don't know if it came through on TV watching live, but I just thought it was an example of what genuinely is sort of modern football coaching and done really, really well.
Well, you can definitely see as we play out of the back, I can visualise all of that. What we don't see off the ball is what Lukic and Iwobi and to a lesser degree Robinson are doing. So it's very interesting and makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you sort of see it on a stream, I guess, on TV. You sort of see Lukic and Iwobi just appear in picture, but I guess you're not picking up the whole aspect of what they're actually doing by appearing in picture. They're pulling players away from something that's happening even further out of picture. And you do kind of have to be at the stadium to actually pick that up. But it does always, it makes total sense because you see the ball get played into Muniz and you wonder how he's kind of found so much space. And it's because Iwobi and Lukic are creating that space for him. A question, do Fulham play completely differently down the left or do you think they're trying to do a similar style of thing on the left? Or is it because Robinson and Willian have this completely different style of play together, do you feel like we just do something completely different on the other side of the pitch?
So we can do something a little bit similar. So sometimes you'll see that if Bassi finds himself under pressure, he will then start looking to go long. And then what happens is Muniz bombs it over to the other side of the pitch to offer that side. Andreas comes over to that side, and Willian becomes that player who comes in and drops in the way that Iwobi does. And actually, he's probably more dangerous. So if they let Willian pick up the ball in that space, or they let Andreas sometimes comes in and drops in, and if they let Andreas pick up the ball and turn in that space, we're really dangerous going forward. But it's different, right? Because I guess Robinson's probably less good on the ball. You don't want him to be sort of making tight passes along a touchline. And it's a complete, and by the way, this is the thing that I find so impressive about Marco Silva. This is completely the opposite of what we did last year, right? Last year, it was all about Tim Ream, sometimes Tom Kearney, often Willian, playing nice triangles coming out the left-hand side of the pitch. And our right side of the pitch was much more back and forth with Kenny Tete and Harry Wilson just sort of being much more direct. And he's flipped that. And they can flip it in game and they can do it in different ways. But, you know, Marco's reinvented this side probably three times this season in terms of how they build and how they progress the ball and what patterns they use. That's really impressive, right? Some managers can't build one version of a coherent team. He's built three in a year, doing very, very different things. I hope he gets his credit, and also I hope he doesn't get enough credit, because if he gets enough credit, he's going to go somewhere else.
Hope no one's watching or listening. Well, I think the other interesting thing about it, you describe it as being a very simple plan, and I think you mentioned in your tweet that it was so simple and so obvious, it was surprising that they didn't seem to pick up on it. But maybe the nuance is that actually there's quite a lot of flexibility in it. So that if they do react in a certain way and we start coming out of the back, there is the option of Robinson, who you say might not be that good on the ball, but he's actually pretty good at breaking forward. If there's some space there, that's a different channel. So there's actually quite a few permutations on how this can actually roll out. And I think these guys don't just focus on football skills. They drill this stuff back to endlessly ad nauseum, and they're good at it. And that's really what we're talking about when we talk about Marco as a genius. This is actually the genius that he's actually got these guys so well drilled.
Yeah, 100%. And look, just before we came on, I know Skinny was saying that from his end of the pitch, he could see sort of what Andreas was doing to add to this. And look, Marco Silva loves Andreas Pereira. He absolutely loves him. And I was sat next to a couple of people getting increasingly frustrated as Andreas was sort of shanking shots left and right and misplacing the ball from time to time. But I think he really trusts him as somebody who understands space and understands what his team wants to do. And I thought, Skippy, what you were saying about Andreas was really interesting as well.
Yeah, so I was going to touch on that. So I think, and the question to you was, is that so for the listeners, Andreas, from my perspective, was really sort of pulling more to sort of our left-hand side and pulling, and Romero seemed to be sort of going with him. So I guess the question for you, Kish, is that a happy accident based on Spurs' game plan? Did you think that Romero was supposed to sit on Andreas to stop him from sort of, because he's got all these sort of stats around one of our biggest chance creators from open play. Was that a happy accident, or is it the way that we were playing from sort of Castagna and sort of Lukic on the right-hand side, pushing Muniz onto Dragosin, that meant that Romero just naturally followed Andreas? Or do you think that was actually Spurs' game plan to have Romero stop him?
I think it's probably how Marco lined them up. So we talked about Lukic being on the right. It just tends to be the case that, and Andreas can sort of go wherever he wants, and he ends up going all over the shop, which is sort of the beauty of his role in the team. But the fact that Lukic was over on that right hand side, it just meant that Andreas was naturally, even out of possession, going to skew over to the left, because he's sort of like the opposite midfielder, even if he's a bit higher. And I guess, look, football is about relationships and matchups and the rest of it. If we've decided that, you know, we know that Ange Postecoglou likes to bring his fullbacks inside and high, and we want to get down the flanks, and if we've identified Dragosin as the centre-half who's the weak link, we want Rodrigo Muniz to be able to bully him. I don't think Romero is really a bullyable player. You might be able to outskill him, but he's quite scary. He might get himself sent off, maybe, but he's a different prospect. And it probably just, the view was, let's have them that way around, so that Andreas sort of keeps him busy. And you can't ignore Andreas because he runs in behind. And, you know, if the ball breaks to Willian or Lukic or whatever, they're very capable, or even Tosin, of just popping it straight over the top to him. So, yeah, he keeps him busy, and it gives us the switch that we want. And it's really interesting, right, because since football's moved to playing out from the back because of the change of rule that with how goalkeepers are allowed to pass the ball at goal kicks, you sort of see these intricate routines in which teams are trying to match up certain players against certain players. It's a bit like basketball. If anyone watches basketball, where, you know, you set a pick and you want to get this really fast guy up against this really big, slow guy. And, you know, football teams are now, and again, I mentioned De Zerbi just because you hear all about his coaches sat sort of eating pizza, coming up with these very intricate passing patterns. You know, coaches are trying to get those switches and get players matched up against sort of less favourable options. And, yeah, I think it worked very, very well. And it's just lovely to be able to watch something, you know, from your perspective that makes sense. Marco makes sense. Perhaps if we had a different manager, I wouldn't be able to run the Twitter account anymore because there'd be nothing that made sense.
Yeah, I don't think you could have had this account when Scott Parker was in charge.
Pass.
Yeah, basically, was it 8 players across the 18-yard box and just make a wall? And it's like, defensive
just pass side to side.
A quick question then, Kish. So you sort of touched upon the sort of focusing down the right-hand side being a relatively new thing from last year. But I think I've been seeing a lot of play down the left, but basically from Robinson's, you know, I think he's won the highest assists from open play in the league this year. So we are definitely focusing down the left, and we've seen a lot of sort of Robinson, Willian, and the triangles still happening probably only about 3 weeks ago. So would you say that this focusing down the right-hand side using Castagna is a very, very new thing, or something that we've been sort of trying since, you know, Castagna's come in, but we're only starting to see the success as it started to sort of being picked up by the team and they're starting to gel a bit more?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. In fact, it might be useful to go to the next slide on this one, because we can, for those who are watching on YouTube, we can show you, and for those who are listening, we can tell.
Almost like a planned transition.
It's almost like a planned transition. You guys have done this before. So, look, just because you start playing on the right-hand side doesn't mean you finish playing on the right-hand side. So I think one of the problems Fulham had last year is that we started to play on the left-hand side because we wanted to attack down the left-hand side, and teams could just basically shuttle across and block it off and then say, all right, good luck, try and break us down with sort of Harrison Reed and Bobby Deckard over Reed. We'll take our chances. We don't want anything coming down this left. And I think what we are seeing is what I think sort of nerds would call overload to isolate, right? So what this means is you throw a load of players over onto one side of the pitch and you overload that side of the pitch to get the attention of the opposition. And then you isolate 2 players, you hold a bit of width over on the other side, and you say, if the ball comes over to them and they get 2-on-2 against sort of a stretch defence, they're going to cause havoc. So what you see in the first half here is that Fulham often would have 8 of their 10 outfield players all mapped over onto the right-hand side. So your left centre-back comes across, your right centre-back comes across, Sasa Lukic is over on that side, João Palhinha is sort of a central defensive midfield player, even he can come over that side. You play off Muniz, you get runners going inside of him, outside of him, from Iwobi, from Castagna, from Lukic. You get Andreas Pereira over to support. And you get a sort of a huge number of players that just suck in numbers for Spurs. And I think also it's worth bearing in mind that for Tottenham, James Maddison nominally plays on the left of their midfield, three, and Saar plays on the right. Saar's better defensively than James Maddison. So by initially playing on this side, you've got an advantage. And then what happens is that when you switch the ball over to the other side, you've got Anthony Robinson and Willian in space. And the two players who are covering them are Dejan Kulusevski, who you know, if you're occupying him going backwards, that's a really good thing, because you don't want him going the other way at you, so you stress him out. And Pedro Porro, who's a really good player, but he's not really a defender, right? He's a wing back. He's an attacking, creative player. So we've produced a situation where we've got all of these players who are quite good in tight space, Castagna, Lukic, Iwobi, Muniz with his sort of strength and hold-up play, and then the others balancing over that side. And we've just left our two probably most creative attacking outlets over on the left-hand side against two of their weakest defenders. And sort of time and time again, you saw the ball would come across to the left. We end up showing the most danger from the left, but it's all because we've overloaded that right-hand side.
I love this. The joy of this is, when you explain it makes total sense. And not just that, it makes total sense like from Marco's perspective, the two players that you'd want in a sort of two-on-two, for me at least, the way they play together is Willian and Robinson. The way Robinson overlaps and stretches a defence, the way Willian can cut inside when Robinson does overlap. So Willian's got the option to cut inside and create a chance or lay the ball off to Robinson, who's so good once he gets to the dead ball line. And you're right, we suck all the players across by overloading. It sounds incredibly simple when you explain it like that, but to actually get 10 outfield players to do that and to actually influence the opposition as well is just proof of why Marco Silva is doing such a good job, because he's getting to stick to the plan and it's a really good plan that's working as well. And, you know, I'd say the first goal at least seems like it comes from that, because Robinson finds himself in a lot of space from a ball that's played across to him, and he puts in a really good early ball and Muniz is just sort of left alone at the back post. And I'd say maybe it was that because the whole Tottenham side had to then shift across to the other side to take care of the Robinson and Willian threat and just didn't actually pick up Muniz's run.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't quite remember what the exact circumstance was. I'm not sure if it's also that we intercepted and sort of had space on our side. The thing also is that, and this is the other thing that we can see for those on YouTube or streaming who can see the graphic, is that Spurs leave these massive gaps in the fullbacks. And this is something that Fulham were guilty of a lot last year, right? They'd bomb on their fullbacks on the outside for us. For Spurs, they'd bomb their fullbacks on the inside. They leave these massive gaps. I've got like about 20 examples of basically Spurs leaving those wide spaces free and us just playing balls into them on either side. And that just massively stresses their defense. It's like their biggest strength is that their fullbacks are really good and really attacking. And their biggest weakness is if you pick the ball off, you can just put it in behind them. But look, and it's not just about the side. And this is again where modern football is going, right? It's not just about, we always do this on the right, we always do this on the left. It's about the players and what they're good at. So someone like Alex Iwobi can sort of play on any side, but he's good in tight space. He's not a Harry Wilson or a Adama Traore who just sort of sprints in behind. He's quick, but he's better in congested space because he's cute on the ball. And you want to keep your players who are better on the ball on this isolated side on the overloaded side that's got little space, and you want to keep your quicker players who are dangerous in space on the other side.
He's quite the chess player, isn't he? And maybe I'll never view watching this game ever again, thanks to you, Kish.
The thing I'd also point out, and that if you think this isn't deliberate, do you remember Fulham got linked to Andre for ages, this Brazilian holding midfield player?
Yeah.
So Andre plays for a team called Fluminense, and Fluminense are managed by a coach called Fernando Diniz, a Brazilian guy. And Fernando Diniz basically is become like a nerd hero because he plays the opposite of Pep Guardiola, who spreads his team out evenly across the pitch. Fernando Diniz plays something which he calls relationism, which is about getting players close together. And they do this. They put players in on one side in close proximity. And I'd imagine Marco is an admirer. And, you know, he likes to buy players from Brazil. And he was linked to a particular player associated with exactly this type of football. So I really think it is intentional. It's studied. And it's really impressive.
It's clever stuff.
I mean, it's really clever. Thing to put it on paper. Like you say, it's really easy to sort of identify the threats and how you're going to combat them, but to have, you know, 10 outfield players to actually buy into your theories and work hard and then put your methodology into practice, I think speaks volumes of the relationship that Marco has with his team and how they actually trust his message. I think we've all heard there's a Schwarzer interview when I think Mark Hughes came in and he told them all how to play, blah, 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 in the dressing room and then walk out. And then, you know, Schwarzer, Murphy and the figureheads of the dressing room said, right, we're going to go back to how Roy had us playing. And then they won the game. You know, there's that kind of element of, yeah, you can talk about what you're going to do. We're going to do what we're going to do. But I think this just shows that Marco has a vision. He has that trust of the players and is building something very, very special and actually really excites me, to be honest. I think we're still... without a certain player that I know you've mentioned his name, but I'm not going to say his name. But without him, we're still in a transitional phase, I think. So there's still more excitement to come. We're not the finished article, and there's something special brewing.
But it's the other interesting thing, we have mentioned it. If we don't score first,
yes,
if Son puts that in the back of the net, it surely is much more difficult. However much you've drunk the Kool-Aid, it's really difficult to stick to this plan and to actually influence them to march to the beat of your drum.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're suddenly up. They're running crazy run lines through the middle of us. And to actually drag players out when they're in the ascendancy and very, very pumped up and feeling like they're about to score, it's pretty difficult to control the game.
Yeah, and if you notice this season, we're not as good when teams sit in. And against a big team, if they get a goal, they're able to sit a little bit more. They maybe don't push on in the same way. And look, I don't think any coach has got like a massive way to break teams apart when they sit in a really organized block. Like the biggest teams in the world struggle to do with it. And the only real answer is you need magicians and you need world-class football players who are able to do something.
Individuals.
And, you know, Marco's coaching a mid-table Premier League team with probably lower half of the team table players. When the game situation is in the right place, he can make them do incredible things. Does he have that absolute world-class quality to sort of get him out of jail when teams park the bus? Probably not. And that's why, again, I don't want to keep on talking about this, but if he went to an elite team, and if he had the best of the best players at his disposal, what can he do with those weapons? I think that's something that directors of football at the best clubs in the world should be thinking about, but they're not, thankfully.
I agree. And I think the other thing to say is the fact that Silva manages to get the same results out of the entire squad. I mean, this is just the 10 players on the pitch against Spurs, but you've got Kenny Reid coming into this side, Kenny Tete when he comes in, Tim Ream and Diop as well. But, you know, the fact that we can chop and change this 11 and almost put out a second 11, and you assume that they'd actually still play in a similar fashion. That's what I like about this. The fact that they, like you said, I think Daddy said it, they're all bought into, they've all drunk the Kool-Aid. They're bought into it. They want to play Silva's way. They're not thinking, this isn't really working, I don't really like this style. They can see the results that come off the back of it, and everyone is bought into it. I wouldn't mind, Kish, if you don't mind answering a couple of the questions that are coming on the live stream. One here from Steve Reynolds. How important have Castagna and Iwobi been this season from a tactical viewpoint?
Massive. Absolutely massive. I think Alex Iwobi is a fascinating football player, right? Because any time we talk about Alex Iwobi, the question everybody wants to ask, including, I think, to Marco at press conferences, is what's his best position? The answer is it doesn't matter. He's good at doing certain things, and those things are really important to the way Marco Silva likes to play. The fact he can do it from different positions means that you don't become predictable, and you can have patterns of play that are recognisable in different areas of the pitch. So I think he's been absolutely outstanding, and he's starting to show sort of end product as well as good play, which was often a criticism of him at Everton. So I think he's been wonderful. I think Castagna's, there's a reason Kenny Tete doesn't get a game, right? And that's, he's a wonderful football player. He's a very different right back. You try and play this yesterday in this way with Kenny Tete right back, and it goes very, very badly wrong. And that's not because I don't love him. I think he's brilliant, but he's better at being the sort of Anthony Robinson equivalent in this setup than the Timothy Castagna. And that's probably why he's not getting a look in. So yeah, I think they've both been essential. And I think Tosin's been really important as well, because he's just got that assuredness, and I think Silva trusts him to read the game in a way that he perhaps doesn't, someone like Issa Diop. So yeah, both of those have been huge.
I 100% agree. I think they've been a couple of very astute signings that I don't think anyone was overly excited about at the start of the season. But now that we've seen the way that they fit into this system, it definitely makes sense as to why we made these signings. And we saw quite a few signings drop off as we were going through the summer transfer window. We were linked with a lot of players and it didn't quite come through, but Iwobi was one who right from the start we really pushed for. and same with Castagne, we were linked for a very long time. And you can really understand why, because they fit into this system so nicely. It just makes sense as the right players to bring in. And maybe that's also why we didn't put a huge amount of focus on finding a striker, because Silva looked at Muniz and said, this is actually the kind of striker that I want at the club. It's just about getting the best out of him. And now that we're seeing the best out of him, it's a bit of an moment, because you go, yeah, that totally makes sense. Another question as well, it was directed to Elton, but I'm going to throw it at you, Kish. Where will we be next season if we lost Jedi? Yeah, true. Jedi, Tosin, and Polina. Talk about from a tactical point of view.
Okay. I can't believe I'm saying this, because it was completely different last season, right? Because of the way we bombed two fullbacks on, and we needed sort of a Superman to tackle everything that moved. Of those three players, I think Joao Polina is probably the one that the system could deal with that. And I know that sounds absolutely bonkers, and I love him, and I don't want him to go anywhere. And I'm sure we'd lose some games because we just lack his presence, his leadership, and his tenacity in the centre of the park. Tactically, I think that it's easier to find somebody who can sit in defensive midfield and sort of make this work with other players around him. The thing to remember about Marco is that you can only play with the players that you've got, and I think he gets that. So, like, when we looked at the transfer window last season, you thought, okay, so number one priority, find a left back who can pass the ball like Tim Ream, because he's so important to everything that we do. And then you realise that finding a left-sided centre-half with a left foot like Tim Ream, who's also defensively sound in the Premier League, is really, really hard. It's like Pau Torres and, you know, a couple of people who play for Man City. They're not a lot of them. So instead you sign Calvin Bassey, who's really good, but in a slightly different way, and you work out what you do around him to make that work. Means you need a right back who can actually pass the ball, because you're going to have to go that side a bit more. You know, it's a jigsaw puzzle. And I think, in a way, our best player, Joao Polina, in the puzzle is an easier thing to find, someone who can do something that makes that work than him. I think the hardest one at the moment for me is Tosin. I think if he were to go, we'd need to invest heavily in a right centre-back who's calm on the ball. They're easier to find the left centre-backs who are calm on the ball, so that's a good thing. But, you know, I think signing into a new contract would be a huge, huge bonus for Fulham. And then Jedi is a freak, right? There are very few players who are physically capable of doing what he's doing. And he's another person that if he went, you'd have to sign somebody slightly different. I don't think you're going to find the same thing in a lab. But that'll be a challenge, and I think it's probably a challenge that we are going to face. I'm quite convinced that somebody is going to sign Anthony Robinson this summer. I don't know what you guys think.
Oh, geez, if you were at all concerned about, you know, the value of Anthony Robinson and the attractiveness of Anthony Robinson, last night was an absolute showcase of what he can do against a very, very good side. Yeah, I have a feeling that he's someone that's going to come looking for him for sure.
Hmm.
Well, one thing I'd also add is, you know, just picking up on one of your points where you said that when we were talking about if we did go one goal down and then they sit in and we don't have that quality to unpick a side who's actually, you know, kind of blocking us out. Maybe, you know, a central midfielder or attacking midfielder who's got outstanding quality. I mean, we're probably talking about a 70, 80, 100 million pound player here, which Marco Silva and Mr. Khan Jr. is just not going to pay for. So you're going to have to find someone who's got that kind of raw talent that you can maybe bring into it. But is that something that, you know, to get to the next level, to consistently unpick teams when we're somewhat against the wall, is that something that we're really, really short of here in this squad?
Yeah, potentially. Does anyone else want to comment? Sorry, I feel like I've been talking too much.
No, yeah, go for it. It was to you, Kish, but anyone else?
Okay, yeah. I mean, I don't know what others think. Yes, They're hard to find. I saw there were some links to Lewis Ferguson, who plays for Bologna, who's sort of that kind of a player. He's less of a magician, like he's not the reincarnation of Kevin De Bruyne, but he's a good attacking midfield player who can make things happen. But also, and I think what's really interesting is that it really does feel like Silva has left his imprint on what we look for in terms of players, because the one thing that Lewis Ferguson has is he's got a massive engine. He works really hard. He presses. He does the sort of things that I'm sure Marco is obsessed with Andreas doing. So I was interested by that link. It sounds fair. Like, it seems like the sort of thing that would be thought of. Whether it's going to happen or whether a bigger team in Europe goes in for him, I don't know. But it's nice when your recruitment sort of makes sense. And that is a leak that sort of made sense to me.
I think to add to that, I think it's at the beginning of the summer or middle of the summer, I'd say, we were really focused on, right, we've got 50 million in for Mitrovic. We now need to find ourselves a striker. And a number nine, I mean, it's really hard to come by. A striker who can sort of bully defences and score goals like he did, it's really hard to come by that we may even have to spend more than 50 million to find. The fact that now we've potentially got a striker who is fitting the bill already at the club allows us now to start thinking, right, we've got all this money on top of potential transfer budget as well that we're looking for in the summer to start spending elsewhere. And I think that's probably the key point now where we can start to think about that winger who can potentially take us to the next level, that center attacking midfielder to potentially compete with Pereira or replace Pereira, to, again, lift us up to that next level. And I think that's something which in the summer we weren't even thinking about, but now it's starting to become a reality where we can start to look at, can we find that Lucas Paquetar for like West Ham, who is next level and really makes them tick, to sort of take you between that kind of mid-table mediocrity to sort of that Europe, competing for Europe. And to be honest, I think that's what we're going to have to start looking at. You say about Ferguson, fits the bill on paper, like you say, might be a little bit out of our kind of realistic transfer if bigger clubs come in, but we've got to start looking at moving to the next level and sort of going for those sort of players which can take Fulham further than just 12th.
And look, the caveat to all of that is that there might be, and actually I had a sort of an education in football finance. I was on the focus pod. And you know, I think that money and the rules of the game in terms of money could be an issue for Fulham, and that's what's being explained to me by people who know it better than I do. And that's when, you know, the model where you can sell an Anthony Robinson or you can sell a Joao Plinio and you can coherently replace them whilst improving in other areas becomes sort of what you need. And you need a few young players to fit the bill and look the part. And you know, maybe there are a few of those knocking about as well from loanies and the rest of it.
Look, I think we're probably pretty close to wrapping up, but I want to ask one more question, Kish. Let's say, perfect world, Fulham in the summer don't sell any players and manage to keep hold of this squad. Tactically, what is the one position that you'd look at actually strengthening? Where would you make your one signing?
I think we've done it. I think it's probably at number 10. I also just think there's not an obvious competitor for Andreas. So Tom Kenny sometimes goes in there, but he doesn't run beyond in the same way. He's a very different player. I weirdly think Harry Wilson might be quite good at it. Just looking at his skill set, I think he could do a decent job there. I think Bobby does the stuff Andreas does off the ball, but probably doesn't offer what he has on the ball. I think that's probably the one. But I think the big caveat there is that you've managed to hold on to everybody. And I think that we're going to be doing a bit of, in the same way that, look, you lost the big man up top and you find a different way of doing things. I think we might be in the same place. But yeah, what's on the wish list for everyone else?
I think I'm in a pretty similar boat there. I'd be looking for someone to either replace or just challenge Pereira. I don't feel like we need the striker. I mean, maybe mid-January I'd be saying we definitely need to sign a new striker, but now I feel more comfortable with Muniz and then Jimenez as backup. I think we will still bring in a striker no matter what, but I do feel like Pereira is that one position that it kind of feels like it's his position and he's not losing that no matter what happens, unless there's an injury and we need to move pieces around a little bit. You know, if you want to challenge that position, it's bringing someone like Iwobi off a wing where he probably performs best, bringing Wilson off a wing where he performs best, bringing in Deckard over Reed, who's not probably quite at the same level. So I think that is that one spot where it would just be nice to have someone else just to keep Pereira pushed more than anything.
I would love a left winger, like a Pedro Neto in your face. As soon as he gets on the ball, defenses get scared, that kind of winger. I mean, could Godot become that guy? Potentially. I mean, I've seen some good things. Or Stansfield, yeah. But I would just love that kind of bring back the Louis Boamorte, Steve Malbronk type player. Like, as soon as he's on the ball, they all back off and go, oh, crap, here he comes. I would love a player like that.
That becomes more necessary if you don't have Jedi's speed behind you.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that might be what we're looking at. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Dad, for you? On mute.
Sorry. The only thing I was going to say was that you kind of hope and wish and pray that results like we had last night change the minds of Sasa Lukic, who I was starting to get the feeling didn't love being at Fulham and may well have been looking for a way out. Jalpolinia, who obviously wants to play at a high level, if we can start doing the things we're doing against the biggest teams, okay, he's got to have a bit of patience, but surely he can see that things are happening. Something special is happening here. And of course, it does require a little bit more gold dust to be sprinkled on this squad. But he could be part of something, and maybe an even bigger cog in this wheel. And I wonder, you know, if he's getting the right sort of wage, if he really is going to leave. You know, I think it's a possibility he might stay. You know. I don't know if I'm just being overly hopeful. If you look at his age, you look at the kind of player he is, which we talk about a lot, and his value and what he means to this squad and what he contributes, and I can see a world that he stays to be part of it.
Mm. And I think with a big team, like, I mean, when he was looking at Bayern Munich, he on the ball, he's probably not that level in my eyes. I think it is, he can be quite wasteful when he's, you know, on the ball. However, in a team like that, how often is he going to be as defensive as he has been for Fulham? I mean, I don't know if his traits really kind of fit the bill. That's my only kind of reservations on the move like that for Zhao. But I could be wrong. But
he's perfect for Fulham.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, you've had situations where selling teams and buying teams have just never agreed on value, right? So like someone like Wilfried Zaha was just so important to Crystal Palace that sort of the value that he held for them was just more than anyone would ever pay for him, even though they liked him as a player. Zhao could be someone like that. I could see that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would make total sense. And I think 1 year older, maybe not. I mean, he's having a good season, but I don't think he's probably standing out quite as much as he did last season, where maybe last season, because he burst onto the scene, all those big clubs going, we really need this player. This season, less so, even though I think he's still leading the tackles and intercepts by a country mile. But he's probably been overshone a little bit by someone like Robinson in the last couple of months, or this Muniz story, Iwobi playing really well, Willian still turning it on. Like, he's just sort of faded, not into the background as such, but he doesn't seem to be this integral part of the lineup anymore. Feels like last season, first name on the team sheet, Jalpolinia. This season, you can basically put the team sheet together like you would any team sheet, start at the keeper and just work forwards, and it kind of makes sense. So I think maybe that will impact any potential transfer. I don't think it's as much of a given as it was maybe at the start of the season, where we all sort of knew that Polina was out the door, and if we got two seasons out of him, it would have been great. I feel like there seems to be a little bit more potential for him to actually stay around for a little bit longer, but we'll wait and see.
I love the way just that within a few months we're talking João Paulinho is not our most important player.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be playing Champions League next year, so we'll probably need him around. Guys, I think we can probably wrap it up there. It's been really good to have a chat about just a really exciting and enjoyable game, and I really loved nerding out with you, Kish. That was really enjoyable, just diving into the tactics. And I think it's funny because we can all sort of watch the game and see it happening, but maybe just not really understand quite how intricate some of these things are. It's simple but complicated. It kind of goes over the layman's head sometimes, and to actually see it laid out in screenshots and have it properly explained to you, it really makes you appreciate it even more and appreciate the result and the way Fulham play. And it's been incredibly enjoyable having you join us for the podcast. I really hope we can do it again in the future. So thank you so much for joining us today.
That's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And all listeners, please do make sure you go and follow at Cottage Tactico on Twitter. A brilliant account, if not only for the Football Manager recreations of tactics as well, which is easily my favourite part, being a Football Manager addict myself. Really, really enjoyable stuff. So make sure you do follow. Skibby, thanks for joining us again today. Really enjoyable to chat this one through.
No worries at all. Thank you very much for having me. But yeah, like you say, I love Cottage Tactico before we even got him on the podcast. So I'm glad we've managed to put sort of a face to the name, and I'd have to love nerding out with you, to be honest.
Love it. And Dad, thank you as always for joining.
Yeah, thank you. What a great conversation in on the back of an incredible night last night. And thanks again, Kish, for joining us. Dave, you missed a treat. I know you're serving up some humble pie to your Spurs in-laws, but I'm sure you would have loved being part of it today. And Sam, God knows what sort of chaos you might have thrown into the middle of it. But look, fantastic chat, guys. I've really, really enjoyed it. And as Jack said, Kish, I hope we can do it again.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you to everyone who joined us on the live stream. Please do continue to like and subscribe and share the That's So Craven podcast with all your Fulham friends. And as always, come on, you Whites.